Chapter 36. A Man Called Uwe and a Whiskey. It is difficult to admit that one is wrong, particularly when one has been wrong for a very long time. Sonia used to say that Uwe had only admitted he was wrong on one occasion in all the years they had been married, and that was in the early 1980s after he'd agreed with her about something that later turned out to be incorrect. Uwe himself maintained that this was a lie, a damned lie. By definition, he had only admitted that she was wrong, not that he was. Loving someone is like moving into a house, Sonia used to say. At first you fall in love with all the new things, amazed every morning that all this belongs to you, as if fearing that someone would suddenly come rushing in through the door to explain that a terrible mistake had been made. You weren't actually supposed to live in a wonderful place like this. Then, over the years, the walls become weathered. The wood splinters here and there, and you start to love that house not so much because of all its perfection, but rather for its imperfections. You get to know all the nooks and crannies, how to avoid getting the key caught in the lock when it's cold outside, which of the floorboards flex slightly when one steps on them, or exactly how to open the wardrobe doors without them creaking. These are the little secrets that make it your home. Uwe, of course, suspected that he represented the wardrobe door in the example. And from time to time he heard Sonia muttering that, "Sometimes I wonder if there's anything to be done, when the whole foundations are wonky from the very start," when she was angry with him. He knew very well what she was driving at. "I'm just saying surely it depends on the cost of the diesel engine and what its consumption is per mile," says Barvana, unconcernedly, slowing the sob down at a red light and trying with some grunts to settle herself more comfortably in her seat. Uwe looks at her with boundless disappointment, as if she really hasn't listened to anything he's said. He's made an effort to educate this pregnant woman in the fundamentals of owning a car. He's explained that one has to change one's car every 3 years to avoid losing money. He has painstakingly run through what all people who know anything are well aware of, namely that one has to drive at least 12,000 miles per year to save any money by opting for a diesel rather than a gas engine. And what does she do? She starts blabbering, disagreeing as usual, debating things like, "Surely you don't save money by buying a car new, and it must depend on how much the car costs." And then she says, "Why?"
"Because," says Uwe.
"Right," says Parvana, rolling her eyes in a way that makes Uwe suspect she is not accepting his authority on the topic as one might reasonably expect her to. A few minutes later, she's stopped in the parking area on the other side of the street. "I'll wait here," she says.
"Don't touch my radio settings," orders Uwe.
"As if I would," she brays, with a sort of smile that Uwe has begun to dislike in the last few weeks. "It was nice that you came over yesterday," she adds. Uwe replies with one of his sounds that isn't words as such, more a sort of clearing of his air passages. She pats him on the knee. "The girls are happy when you come over. They like you." Uwe gets out of the car without answering. There wasn't much wrong with the meal last night, he can stretch to admitting that. Although Uwe doesn't feel there's a need to make such a palaver about cooking as Parvana does. Meat and potatoes and gravy are perfectly adequate. But if one has to complicate things like she does, Uwe could possibly agree that her rice with saffron is reasonably edible. It is, so he had two portions of it, and the cat had one and a half. After dinner, while Patrick washed up, the 3-year-old had demanded that Uwe read her a bedtime story. Uwe found it very difficult to reason with a little troll because she didn't seem to understand normal argumentation, so he followed her with dissatisfaction through the front hall towards her room and sat on her bedside, reading to her with his usual Uwe excitement, as Parvana once described it, although Uwe didn't know what the hell she meant by that. When the 3-year-old fell asleep, with her head partly on his arm and partly on the open book, Uwe had put both her and the cat in the bed and turned out the light. On the way back along the hall, he'd gone past the 7-year-old's room. She was sitting in front of her computer, of course, tapping away. This seemed to be all kids did these days, as Uwe understood it. Patrick had explained that he'd tried to give her newer games, but she only wanted to play that one, which made Uwe more favorably disposed both to the 7-year-old and to her computer game. Uwe liked people who didn't do what Patrick told them to do. There were drawings everywhere on the walls in her room, black and white pencil sketches mostly. not at all bad, considering that they had been created by the absence of deductive faculties and highly undeveloped motor function of a 7-year-old, Uwe was willing to admit. None of them were of people, only houses. Uwe found this extremely engaging. He stepped into the room and stood beside her. She looked up from the computer with the dour expression this kid always seemed to lug about with her, and in fact, she didn't seem too pleased about his presence. But when Uwe stayed where he was, she pointed at last to an upside-down storage crate made of plastic on the floor. Uwe sat down on it, and she started quietly explaining to him that the game was about building houses and then making cities out of the houses. "I like houses," she muttered quietly. Uwe looked at her. She looked at him. Uwe put his index finger on the screen, leaving a large fingerprint, pointing at an empty space of the town and asking her what happened if she clicked that spot. She moved her cursor there and clicked, and in a flash, the computer had put up a house there. Uwe looked fairly suspicious about it. Then he made himself comfortable on the plastic box and pointed at another empty space. 2.5 hours later, Parvana stomped in angrily and threatened to pull out the plug if they didn't call it a night at once. As Uwe stood in the doorway getting ready to leave, the 7-year-old carefully tugged at his shirt sleeve and pointed at a drawing on the wall right next to him. "That's your house," she whispered, as if it was a secret between her and Uwe. Uwe nodded. Maybe they weren't totally worthless after all, those two kids? He leaves Parvana in the parking area, crosses the street, opens the glass door, and steps in. The cafe is empty. The fan heater overhead coughs as if it's full of cigar smoke. Amel stands behind the counter in a stained shirt, wiping glasses with a white towel. His stocky body has sunk into itself, as if at the end of a very long breath. His face bears that combination of deep sorrow and inconsolable anger which only men of his generation and from his part of the world seem capable of mastering. Uwe stays where he is, in the center of the floor. The two men watch one another for a minute or so. One of them a man who can't bring himself to kick out a homosexual youth from his house, and the other who couldn't stop himself. Eventually, Uwe nods grimly and sits down on one of the bar stools. He folds his hands together on the counter and gives Amel a dried look.
"I wouldn't be adverse to that whiskey now if it's still on offer."
Amel's chest rises and falls in a couple of jerky breaths under the stained shirt. At first, he seems to be considering opening his mouth, but then he thinks again. In silence, he finishes wiping his glasses, folds up the towel and puts it next to the espresso machine. Disappears into the kitchen without a word. Comes back with 2 glasses and a bottle. The letters on the label illegible to Uwe. Puts these down on the counter between them. It is difficult to admit that one is wrong, particularly when one has been wrong for a very long time.